Blog Talk Radio.
Come review the sport of boxing as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Trainer of Champions. We'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. We have some lot of news in boxing going around the world, and we're going to try to get the best news possible for those who are listening that's happening around the world in boxing. We have some very, very special guests with our guest that's going to be on later on in the show. But this is our show is really turning into something very, very special. And it's turning to be good. We have from our studio in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. We're waiting for Bob to come on, but there's a lot of things going on in the sport of boxing. If you haven't heard the Mike Tyson punch out game that was on the Nintendo, that was its 30th anniversary this year, and wow, 30 years, where did it go? So fast when a young heavyweight champion named Mike Tyson came on the boxing scene, the computer and all of these computer games were just starting, and he reached his height with that game. And that game punch out, and there's a lot of boxing games that follow that. That makes it so good and so interesting. As we sit here, and we want to congratulate Mike Tyson for that Nintendo game with his name on it called Punch Out. And a lot of these young on the phone right now, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How are you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. It's a beautiful Saturday morning. Yeah, for late October, man, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
it's a sunny day.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, in Pottsville, man, up here in that mountain site, man, which the town of Pottsville sits in between seven mountains, as you well know,
yes.
Bob. And during this time of year, wow, is it beautiful in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. I mean, with the changing of the leaves, the mountainside, the fresh air, the smell of the pines, you know, some leaves on the ground, some still up, man, all the colors of the rainbow. It's just something kind of special. But, Bob, look,
I got you
on the line, man. I was talking about Mike Tyson's Nintendo Punch-Out. And it was 30-year anniversary of the Punch-Out game on Nintendo. So, Bob, what else is going on in boxing today? Give us some of that news.
Hey, we got a couple of big stories happening this week. First of all, we'll start with yesterday out of weigh-in. We'll get to that. The Jezreel Corrales, the invisible one, 22-1-0 with 8 KOs. Now, he was going to be defending his WBA junior lightweight title tonight up in Verona, New York, against Albert Explosivo Machado, who actually what happened was Corrales came in overweight yesterday, 130-pound limit. He came in almost 4 pounds overweight. So what that means is there's still fight tonight, but if Corrales wins, the title becomes vacant. If Machado wins, then he's the new junior lightweight title holder of WBA. So that's kind of an interesting little development there. Coming in 4 pounds overweight, though, that seems like a lot to me. You know,
oh,
I mean, I can see coming in. Yeah, when you're at 130 pounds.
Or did he train at all? Did he try to make the weight? This is the question, Bob.
I know, yeah. Right? Yeah, it's like 130 pounds, man. You know, that's a big difference. And the other big news this week was Anthony Joshua is now set to fight Carlos Takam after Kubrat Pulev suffered a shoulder injury while training. And then I was wondering, how do you get a guy ready in 10 days to fight somebody like Joshua? You know, I mean, all of a sudden he's picked out, he's the number three contender, so he's next in line. So is he kind of waiting for this? Is he ready? You know, what do you think about that?
Well, there's an old saying in boxing, you stay ready when you're a contender.
Stay ready.
Because you never know when your opportunity like this comes about. And, you know, a lot of guys in a fill-in bout upset the apple cart for a lot of guys sometimes, you know. Depends how focused he is. And Anthony Joshua, man, you can't underestimate a fighter like this. You know, you're preparing, you're working different techniques to take advantages and the disadvantages of your opponent, and then someone else gets there. Sometimes for guys in training, it's rough for them to make the adjustment in a short period of time. However, if you're constantly practicing on fundamentals and fundamental drills, it don't matter who you fight. A fighter fights, and he's able
right.
to make the adjustment, especially a boxer puncher. You know, he can make the
right.
adjustment to different styles. And we'll see.
Right. You look at Joshua. Now, he was training to fight Pulev, and all of a sudden he has to change maybe a little bit, too, to just technique, like you're saying, and stuff, to take on somebody else after you've been training to fight one guy, too. So it's a two-sided coin there, I look at it. You know, like, you know, Takam has to go up against Joshua. Joshua has to change his game a little bit, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. But, you know, that's what great fighters are able to do. They're able to make adjustments in the ring while they're fighting. And this is what Anthony Joshua, it might be a tougher fight than what they think. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. This could be an exciting moment for the boxing fan.
Right. That's going on next week over in Cardiff, England. And also next Saturday night, we have the WBC silver heavyweight title fight between the champion Dillian White. He's 21-1 with 16 KOs. He's fighting Robert Helenius. And White, he wants to fight Deontay Wilder sometime early in 18. So we're looking to see what he does in that fight. That's also next week as well. And I've got some things on the undercard, too, for that next week that have been announced now. Women's boxing, Katie Taylor will challenge for the WBA lightweight championship versus Anahi Esther Sanchez, and that's part of the undercard. Also, on that card, WBA super flyweight title holder Cal Yafai defends his title against the Japanese mandatory challenger Sho Ishida. And then we have, that's actually in Worcester, Mass. I'm sorry, yeah, but on the other card is, this is an interesting one, too. We have former UFC heavyweight Gabriel Napao Gonzaga. He makes his pro boxing debut in a four-rounder on that card against former MMA fighter Alejandro Escalante. So we have a UFC guy going against an MMA guy in the boxing ring. That's kind of interesting, too. And, we'll get to that a little bit later because we're going to talk about that Mayweather thing. We'll bring that up eventually. But anyway, also tonight in Newark, New Jersey, the IBF champion Murat Iron Gassiev, he takes on the former world champion Krzysztof Lazarczyk. They face off in the World Boxing Super Series Cruiserweight quarterfinal. And in a final eliminator for the IBF featherweight title, also on that card, we have Jack Cotterell fighting British junior welterweight champion Tyrone Nurse. And lots going on over there across the sea. We have Belfast in Northern Ireland, IBF champ Ryan Burnett takes on Janat Zakanava, who's trained by legendary British trainer Ricky Hatton. That's a name you know well. He's one of the great British trainers, Ricky Hatton.
Yeah, he's a pretty good fighter there, Bob, too. A pretty good champion, you know.
Yeah,
now he's out there training fighters. Wow, it's good to see that he stays in the game and he keeps on going.
Right, yeah. And now tomorrow, Commonwealth welterweight champion Chris George, he's got a record of 12-1 with 6 knockouts. He defends his title against Jack Brubaker with a record of 13-1-1 with 7 KOs in a 12-rounder in Sydney, Australia. And also down under, we have, that's going on tonight, super middleweight up-and-comer Bilal Akawi. He's 14-0-1, 12 KOs, and he clashes with the veteran Carlos Adan Jerez. He's got a lot of fights, 45-20-3 with 18 KOs. So he's been around a long time, too. That's some good boxing going on in the land down under. Also this week, we got the date and the place for that WBO middleweight championship fight between the undefeated Billy Joe Saunders taking on former champion David Lemieux, and that's now set for December 16th in Montreal. And there's a great super featherweight 10-round fight just announced as part of the Kovalev-Strabonsky fight on November 25th at Madison Square Garden.
Hey, these names, Bob, you're handling these names. I want you to know that. It's incredible. Now, Bob, you do so well at the news. You've been doing this for such a long time. But could you imagine, the fans that are trying to follow these guys? what happened to
people? Yeah, we have Jacques Ivanov and Wojtarczyk and Shabronsky. Yeah, sometimes it sounds like I'm talking about hockey or something like that, these Russian names and things, you can get used to these names. But anyway, this the super featherweight fight, that's featuring Jason El Canito Sosa, 22-4, 14 knockouts, taking on Robin Hood, Robinson Castellano, with a 24-13 record with 14 knockouts. And also just announced on November 4th, WBC bantamweight champion Luis Pantera Neri. He's 24-0 with 18 KOs. Now he's going to face Arthur the King Villanueva, 31-2 with 17 knockouts. Now it's a non-title 10-rounder taking place in Tijuana because Neri, now he won that title last August, but he failed the drug test. So the WBC is still investigating that, but they're still going to go on with this fight. But again, it'll be a non-title fight. So we'll see what happens there. And we also heard a little bit of shaking over there in the Mayweather camp this week, too. They're talking, they did some promos, showed Mayweather working out, trying to figure out, is he really coming out of retirement again? And there's a rumor about him might even fight McGregor. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out. That was a one-and-done deal, I thought. But Mayweather's looking for the big paycheck, and he's trying to find some way to get in the ring and create some excitement, but we'll have to keep an eye on what's happening in that regard because we'll see. I mean, the man's 50-0, and who's he going to fight? Now, I think it'd be interesting if he got in the ring with he started doing a little MMA stuff. That would be interesting because we talked to James Toney, a few weeks ago, who actually fought like that too. He went into the octagon and lost, and then he was going to fight the guy in the boxing ring, and he backed out his opponent. So I don't know what's going to happen with Mayweather camp, but he's making some noise out there.
Mayweather's size, if I was him, since he did the MMA, he might as well go all the way like Muhammad Ali did and Mike Tyson him did. He might as well take on – who's the big-time wrestler now? John Cena or somebody?
He
should call one of them.
Go wrestler.
I think if Mayweather called one of those wrestling guys out and told them that he wanted to whip on their money, I think that would generate a great pay-per-view, man. I believe it would do the hype, man, because, them wrestling fans, them MMA fans, I think it would be something exciting that I think that he could do. I'd try the wrestling tip. He done did that. MMA, UFC, just go all the way out, Bob.
Get the chairs out. Start throwing chairs at people.
Break the chairs over. Somebody said, "Go!" A chair.
Yeah, jump off the top of the ropes,
smash the table, you know what I mean? Like,
I'd love to see Mayweather flying off the roof. Yeah, climb up the ropes and jump on the guy.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Jump, fly through the air, land on the guy. Boom! You know what I mean? Get some fire in there, going down the stairs. And that way, his whole crew with Nate Jones and all them guys can be involved. Just make it a big out. broil.
Yeah, there you go. That would generate some interest. Yeah, I think so.
Well, hey, look. You look at what he did, what happened with the MMA thing. Them guys were doing it. You might as well go to wrestling tip, you know. Just go all brawls out. You know how they do it in wrestling.
I'd love to see it. Well, anyway, we'll keep everybody in tune what happens there. We'll be following that, I'm sure, you know, see what Mayweather's going to do next. Or is he just making some noise? Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe he might want to fight some. Maybe he want to take on Joshua or something like that too. You know, you never know.
why not? But it seems the heavyweights. There's so much going on. This fight's falling out. This one gets suspended. You know, Wilder, he can't come to contract terms. To fight somebody. This one falls out. That falls out. One tests positive for drugs. Then he goes over to Ortiz, goes over to the WBA. He thinks he's going to get a shot over there, positive over there. So they outright banned him from the WBA. You know, with this heavyweight division, it looks like the only match that really, really matters right now is a Wilder and Joshua. Maybe both of them could. You know, it could happen for them. You know, they.
Well, we're talking about that. Yeah, that next week too. That Dillian White, he's going to be fighting that Hellenius, but he should take care of that business there. But then he wants to fight Wilder early 18, so he's in the mix too, depending on what he does. But he's an up and comer as well, so we'll see how that all shakes out too. But yeah, they're bouncing around quite a bit, trying to find out who they're going to match up with.
Yeah, well. Well, if Floyd's going to fight, you know, Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, Triple G, you know, Triple G and a Mayweather fight is a big fight. It would be something that the boxing fans want to see. And like they say, Triple G better watch out for asking for money because that's what you just might get. Because one thing about Floyd Mayweather, accepts challenges, and for him being in the gym playing around, and they talked about it, and it's amazing. For all the money that he gets, you don't hear none of these guys calling Money Mayweather out.
Yeah.
Well, you
can, you know, you think he'd want a piece of that action,
None of them. I don't hear that. They don't say, if I was Crawford and all them guys, I would want to fight the best of the best of the best. Call them out. Hey, look, get in there and try. You might get lucky.
Yeah, the guy's 50-0. Let's come on,
everybody else
can. Well, exactly. So you lose, so what? He's 51-0 now, you know? And you're just one of 50 people that lost to him, you know? So when you get that shot, that's what it's all about, yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, I really, really don't understand it. But, wow. You know, it's just one of those things, you know?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
so
while we wait in the wings for our next guest, there's so much going on around the world, Bob. It's just amazing what's going on, Bob. You know.
Yeah, we're still waiting to hear more from Jeff Horn. I mean, we talked about a couple of fights going on down there in Sydney, and I know there's something that he's talking about fighting in Brisbane, but they don't have a date and all this kind of stuff, but he's a good one to look at, too. But, you know, so we got Australia happening. You know, of course, we're talking about the big fight next week in Cardiff with Joshua, but a good fight tonight over there in Leeds for the IBF featherweight title. And so there's a lot going on all over the world, too. As we're mentioned, because we are the World Boxing Review. We do cover the world.
Hey, look, well, Bob, let's get ready to announce our next guest, Bill and Linda Dempsey. They are second to none when it comes to Boxing Hall of Fame, the National Boxing Hall of Fame.
National.
Out in
California,
Welcome to the show, Bill and Linda. How are you doing?
Thank you. We're doing just fine. How are you folks doing?
Oh, well, we're
very
doing
good.
Great. Bob's here, Bob Murray, and Bill and Linda Dempsey. Well,
hi.
We want to ask y'all guys, with a project, you know, with a Boxing Hall of Fame is something, and the National Boxing Hall of Fame, give us a little brief description of how it got started.
Okay, will do. First, I want to say hello to both of you by name, Aaron and Bob. I'm very honored to be on your show today, so looking forward to this. Our association, we have the National Boxing Hall of Fame, and it evolved into what it is at this point. We started out, we've been involved with the different associations that honor the boxers. Hold on a second, please.
His speaker can hear.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Linda's with me here also.
So it's hard on the other phone. There
yeah.
we go.
So anyway, we've started out with the Golden State Boxers Association back about,
2014 is when we created it.
No, I'm talking about was the Golden State. The Golden State Boxing
Hall of Fame. The Cauliflower Club.
yes, it evolved exactly. And the Cauliflower Club was a combination of the boxers and the wrestlers out here in California. And when they separated, we started the Golden State Boxers Association. And that actually evolved into what we have now as the National Boxing Hall of Fame. And so it's been around for a long time. However, as the National Boxing Hall of Fame, it's brand new. And that's when we really started giving the awards as the Hall of Famers. Up till then, we were giving awards, but it wasn't a Hall of Fame. It was honoring the fighters and the people involved in the business. Which has just been a pleasure throughout all these years. Love honoring the retired fighters and the old timers that have been in the business for so long.
Yeah.
And you know, a fighter's life—it's so exciting. They're young. They're going for a career. It's an exciting time for them, and everybody's there to see them. They're the center of attention when they're performing. I mean, from the very beginning as an amateur, when they're walking down to that ring, they are the center of attention. And it's a very wonderful, compelling thing for these young guys to get to experience. And a lot of them come from lifestyles haven't honored them a whole lot. And here they are being applauded and celebrated. And then they have some of them go on to have these great careers and they're on the top of the world. And then one day it all ends. The bottom falls out. And slowly they disappear from the conscience of the young people coming up, don't know who they are, all that. And it can be a very sad situation. And to have these associations that keep these people, these great athletes, reminding other people how special they are, how special they were, and they remain that special. And to remind themselves, those athletes themselves, say, when we honor them, they get to experience how special they are. And it's such a great feeling, very emotional to be involved in. And we've just had some tremendous, tremendous time. And we love the athletes, the athletes involved in this, and then the people surrounding the business. There's so many wonderful people in this business.
Now, Now, Bill, it's to my understanding that the National Boxing Hall of Fame was once the California Boxing Hall of Fame. Is that right?
Or well, not exactly. Not exactly, Aaron. Let me explain that. We were the Golden State Boxers Association. Now, about 12 years ago when we started the California Boxing Hall of Fame?
Maybe 15. We've been with Don Frazier since the beginning of we've been involved with California Boxing Hall of Fame since the beginning, and that would be about 15 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
Don's
about,
in his 90s now.
Yeah, about 15 years ago then. Don Frazier, who was the president of the Golden State Boxers Association at that time, and another gentleman by the name of Julian Eggett, brought this to our attention that they said, hey, how about we start a California Boxing Hall of Fame? And that was under the Golden State Boxers Association. And so we all agreed, said, oh, they told us how this was going to work and everything. So we said, hey, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And this was actually before the International Boxing Hall of Fame had started. But what it was to honor the California fighters and boxing world.
Yeah, just in California.
Right. So we started that. And that was the California Boxing Hall of Fame. Now, Don Frazier ended up when he retired as president of the Golden State Boxing Association. He remained a member, but when he retired as president, he wanted to take the California Boxing Hall of Fame and have that as his, and we all agreed. And then he continued with the California Boxing Hall of Fame. Now,
we've been at every event.
We
helped create programs and.
we were with the California Boxing Hall of Fame from the very beginning. We were really, you could almost say,
when
we were
when
partners.
You're talking about creating the program, such as wasn't Guns and Hoses that police and firemen amateur event that they're doing now in a lot of places around the country. Y'all helped start that, right?
Well, not the Golden State Boxing Association. However, my cousin in St. Louis started the Guns and Hoses
charity. Yeah, the big box.
The charity thing back there. We went back there one year for that event. It was fantastic. I think it was at the Shriner Auditorium or an enormous auditorium there. And they filled the place. It was great.
They really grew to Kansas City as well. So that is really big. It's a wonderful event.
But that's a separate run organization out here in California, Aaron. This is that's Guns and Hoses. That's another that's put on. I think the police or fire probably together are the ones that run
that. They do it. In Cincinnati, Ohio, that's a big event out there, that Guns and Hoses tournament. But anyway, Bob, you also fought when you were in the military, right, in Vietnam or something like that, right?
Well, I actually fought here in California before I went in the service. I had fought for a couple of years. I fought Johnny Flores had a gym in Pacoima, and Johnny Flores was a very well-known boxing manager and trainer. And when I wanted to start fighting, my dad took me down to Johnny's gym, and that's where he dropped me off and picked me up when I was good and bloody.
talk about your father. Your father, Dick Young, and not Dick Young, the famous sports writer from New York, but your father is Dick Young, the one with the WBHOF Hall of Fame, the World Hall of Fame, and the National Hall of Fame. That's your father, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, he was the year I was born, he was had been involved in the boxing. My grandfather, his father, was a Missouri state champion. My dad was involved in the boxing in St. Louis. And the year I was born, 1941, how old does that make me? 30?
No, don't.
Anyway, 1941 was when my dad started his career as a referee. He had been training and everything in the boxing and then also in officiating up till then. And 41, and he got his license, and he was a professional referee at that time. And so I was born into the business. And dad, you know, taught me how to fight, to box somewhat. However, my dad really didn't want me to fight. That was a battle my dad had.
Yeah.
He loved the sport, but he just didn't want to see one of his sons in there fighting. But anyway, yeah, so.
He traveled all over the world.
Yeah, dad
was everywhere.
Very proud of my dad. He was a wonderful.
Oh, absolutely, and a noted good referee and judge. He was with the WBC organization, who I am an ambassador for, and I've been trainer of the year award. But your father was a referee for the WBC too. But there's other things that's happening out there, and with that Hall of Fame that you have, you know, this big project that you have about the James Jeffries Barn, you know, tell us about that project. Now that is something special, that barn and everything. Describe it. Tell us all about it.
Okay. Well, now we're really, really excited about this because we're going to have a great time there. It's fun. I'm going to let Linda describe it, because she has put so much energies into it. I would feel selfish if I described it. So, Linda, talk away. Tell us about the Jeffries Barn.
How
that came about and what all is going on.
Well, I was, I'm always doing the research on a lot of these boxers, and Tony Treem, we were talking about James Jeffries, and we were talking about that barn. And of course, we knew the story about the barn, that it was moved to Knott's Berry Farm from out of Burbank. And I thought, boy, wouldn't it be great if we could have an event in that Knott's Berry Farm barn, because Bill and I had been there. We know that a lot of the boxing memorabilia was actually removed from there. It wasn't Hank Kaplan. I forgot who it was that had passed away. Al Nelson, I think, is the one that was the last one there. And, of course, Tony and his father were very involved by going to that Jeffries barn. So in the conversation, I thought, hey, maybe we can have an event there and induct James Jeffries. So with that being said, I contacted it. It took quite a while to get it approved through the Knott's Berry Farm, and we set it up. And it's set for February 17th, and Tony Treem and Steve Lott are the historians. They're going to put together the program of the, of course, the great Jack Johnson and Jeffries fight. All, you know, I don't know exactly what they're bringing in, but I know it will be really good, because they have a lot of history and a lot of archives of the James Jeffries and Jack Johnson. So we're excited about that. And we were going to have a special guest. Of course, the WBC will be there. We're going to present the National Boxing Hall of Fame Award for James Jeffries and the barn. And this will be presented to the Knott's Berry Farm corporate. And along with that, WBC is going to present a belt to them. So we're really, really excited about etching James Jeffries' name back into that barn. but I'm not sure exactly what they'll do at the award, but I know they're happy about it, so they will be present. And then it's we have it on our website, all the information, the great menu, admission to the park all day, no charge from the time it opens to the time it closes. So right in smack in the middle of the day, right in the park, is the barn, called the Wilderness Dance Hall, and it's fantastic. You look at it, and it just brings back memories for those that have been there. I have some pictures of
the boxers that were an actual boxing picture of these guys fighting in that barn in Burbank. And, of course, a lot of information will be there on James Jeffries. And of course, we're wanting
I want to ask you a question. Where can people go and find the information to attend your event in February? You have a website, a telephone number, email address, or anything like that? Just blurt it out so the listening audience, if they're interested, they can call you, email you, some kind of way.
Okay, they can buy the tickets now online, which is at our website, the nationalboxinghalloffame.com. It is on the front page, and so they'll see all about, you know, what time it is and where it's located, and the you know, all the information is there. They can buy through PayPal or a credit card, or they can even send it in to our P.O. box. So that's all on the front page, and yes, we welcome everybody. I wish we could fit. I wish we could fit a lot of people. I think it's gonna be tight. I feel it's gonna be a sellout. So I know that Knott's Berry Farm, if they're coming from out of state, they can stay at the Knott's Berry Farm Hotel. It's a decent price right now, but you know the prices always change there at the hotel, so they might want to book that early. So. But thank you, Aaron. Yeah, we're really looking forward to that. And, of course, our upcoming National Boxing Hall of Fame will be that April of 2018, which is April 28th. And we have quite a ticket. And Bill can tell you more on that because he knows those boxers. And we are really excited with we just got a great gathering already. And we're moving it to the Quiet Cannon, which is overlooking the golf course in Montebello. We were having it at the Stevens Steakhouse, which a lot of the people on the east side of L.A., they're very familiar with Stevens Steakhouse. And the Quiet Cannon has actually had boxing matches there. So we moved it there to the Grand Ballroom, which can hold a lot more people. The parking is bigger, and we're just really excited about the Quiet Cannon. We love Stevens Steakhouse. They've been so good to us, but we just have to move to a bigger spot. So, but anyway, Bill can tell you more on that.
Go ahead,
Bill. Okay. Yes, yeah, Aaron.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, the National Boxing Hall of Fame, the inductees and the dinner and all that. And that's April 28th, did you say?
Yes, it is, April 28th. And we're going to honor Al Bernstein, Herbert Santos. I would imagine you know who he is, commissioner in Las Vegas there. Muhammad
and
Ali.
And Al
Bernstein, yes. And in the and you know Al Bernstein, I'm sure, yes. And posthumous, we have Muhammad Ali, Zora Foley, Jerry Quarry, Bundini Brown, trainer Miguel Diaz, and we have from Top Rank there. And we have Michelle Chong. She's a feature writer. You'll see her all over the place. She's all over in the industry big boxing fan. And she writes some wonderful articles. She's a writer. My Boxing Fans Chatterbox Columns is where you'll find her. And we're going to honor Ruben Castillo, George Chavallo, Juan Laporte, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Lupe Pintor, Richie Sandoval, he lives up there by you, Carlos Zarate. And we also have a deal of the Howie Steindler Award. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with who Howie Steindler is. He was the owner of the Main Street Gym here in Los Angeles. He actually was murdered quite a few years back. And right when he had his first world champion, Danny Little Red Lopez had just become a world champion right before Howie was murdered.
What a fight,
Ernie Lopez! Yeah, he was a wonderful fighter. And Ernie Lopez, Indian Red Lopez, his older brother, was also one of Howie's fighters. But he had the Main Street gym there and at that time. And so we have the Howie Steindler Award that we give each year. And his daughter helps to pick who is going to receive that Howie Steindler Award. We also have the Don Jose Suleiman Award, and this year it's going to Don Majestic, and the WBC.
Don Majestic, oh, what a
the
guy.
Majestic.
What a guy.
Now, and so you know him as well. You know everybody in the business.
Amazing resume you have.
If there was a fighter around the country, Don Majeski, he knew about it. If Don Majeski didn't know about a fighter, if somebody mentioned, and if he didn't know him, the guy wasn't a fighter. Let me tell you, that's how good Don Majeski is. You know.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, we have somebody that I think that you know pretty well, and you hold on, and we're going to invite him into the show. Our historian for the World Boxing Review, Tony Grimm. How you doing, Tony?
Good morning.
How's everybody today?
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Bob's here, and also we got some of your friends. That you associated with, Bill and Linda Dempsey, Tony, is on the show. They're online with you now.
They're great people. I'm sure everybody enjoyed listening to Bill and Linda. They do a great job.
Good morning, Tony.
Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Bill and Linda. Good to hear it from you.
Yeah, you too.
Just hold on, Tony. We have around about we have a little bit more time, Tony, before your segment. We want to finish up Bill and Linda. Bob, do you have any questions for Bill and Linda?
Yeah, I do. I have kind of a two-part question. Okay, the National Boxing Hall of Fame now, and so is there still like a Golden State Hall of Fame, Boxing Hall of Fame? Plus, the second part of the question is, as the National Boxing HOF, do you deal with like the New Jersey Hall of Fame or any of the other states that have their own individuals as far as being a national? How do you coordinate and how do you work with those other organizations?
Well, we are individual organizations, so we don't really work together per se. However, we have communications with different people in some of those organizations, and we have a good rapport with them. It's not a competition kind of a feel. At least from this end, it isn't. We're very comfortable. What we try to do, though, is not interfere with something one of them has going on. Like if they're getting ready to honor somebody, and we know about it, we're not going to try to slip in under the radar and
right.
try to, yeah. So we try to keep an eye on that. But as far as actually calling up and going, hey, can you give me some suggestions for this or that and the other thing? No, we don't do that.
Like Gaspar Ortega, we honored him last year, and Ring 8 didn't know it. We didn't know they were honoring him. So Gaspar Ortega was really scrambling to get from California back to New York to Charlie Norcus, you know, the group there. But it was just great. He was really excited having a back-to-back Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he left. He left our the next morning. He left our event, and the next morning he was hustling down to the airport to fly out that morning to get back to New York for the event. So they were excited. They were handling it just well, but those things happen. So it turned out. Bob, I wanted to say something here.
Bill and Linda, we have 3 minutes in closing.
Okay.
What do you want to say about the National Boxing Hall of Fame? Say anything you like.
Okay, we have something that's a little different. It's the Bobby Chacon Gift of Love Award that we give each year. And we have been, where that came about, Bobby Chacon, we honored him in our very first event. He died right after that. I did the eulogy for him at the funeral. Bobby and I were very close. And it broke my heart. I knew it was coming. You know, Bobby was getting sicker. Anyway, to hurry on, after the event, we decided, Linda and I decided, and we took it to the board, how they would feel about us giving some, awarding Bobby just some money for the people that were taking care of him and whatever, to give him a little leg up on. So we did, and we didn't have much because we're just getting going, but we gave him $500, and that was to go to Bobby, and it felt really good. The people enjoyed that. Bobby was real happy, and so it was such a nice feeling. We said, we got to make this a part of our award ceremony every year. So we now give the Bobby Chacon Gift of Love Award, and it comes with an actual award and everything else, and then a financial donation to that person. And it's for, it could be the family. It could be, you know,
WBC, because they help distribute.
Right. And what we did the next year when we started that is we awarded Chango Carmona the award, and we gave it to the WBC because they have the WBC Cares. And they're very, very kind, and they're out there helping these guys, and it goes beyond even the boxing world. So it goes to them, and now they give it out.
Mauricio Suleiman.
He's a wonderful man.
Yeah. Well, Bill, we like to thank you and Linda and the National Boxing Hall of Fame for coming on the World Boxing Review radio show today. It's been a pleasure, and we'll have you back. You know,
well,
you won't be forgotten, and we'll invite you back. But, you know, we have a limited time, and we'd like to thank you, because we got to get to your boxing historian, who's our boxing historian, so we can go over this boxing history just a little bit more for this weekend. Thank you and Bill and Linda for coming on the World Boxing Review radio show. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you
so much. God bless you.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron.
God bless you.
And bye, Tony.
Well, yeah, thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Trainer of Champions. And also, we have the radio aficionado, Bob Murray. We like to say to Tony Trim, our boxing historian, man, I know you got something great going on right now. You're going to be doing a series from the 1700s up to the date each week. You're going to push along further. What do you got for now to start it off, Tony?
Well, good morning, first of all, man, and thanks for having me on again. I'm going to start with this morning. We're going to talk about bare-knuckle fighters from 1719. We're going to talk a little bit about the rules and regulations back in those days. We're going to talk about the American bare-knuckle champions, the lineal champions, or the undisputed heavyweight champions. We're going to talk a little bit about the White Hope era, and when it came about and why it came about, and then we're going to talk about the men that held part of the title. They were the title claimants, is what they call them. They held, you know, a portion of the title. They were not lineal champions, or better known as the undisputed heavyweight champion. Ancient Olympic was our first rules that was under the London bare knuckle fighting, and that took place, and it ran all the way up until the Broughton Rule came into effect on August 16th, 1743. there was a couple small little rules that came into effect. I can't remember what they were called, but they're really small little rules that came into effect in 1814 and 1828 that really didn't amount to a whole lot. But the London prize ring rule came into effect in 1838. The London prize ring rule was revised in 1853, and that stayed into effect until the Mystique of Queensbury rule took over the ruling of boxing in 1865 and still rules boxing today. English bare-knuckle champions, there were 44 bare-knuckle champions before there ever was a bare-knuckle champion in America and the first man on record, and they didn't keep records until 1719, and the first man on record was James J. Figgs, the first heavyweight champ of London, and he held the title from 1719 to 1730. And then we go into the American heavyweight champions. The first one of in America was Tom Molineaux, and he held the title from 1810 to 1815. There were 13 American world champions, with the last being the great John L. Sullivan. He held the title from 1882 to 1889. From that era, we go into the American heavyweight champions of the world, or the undisputed heavyweight champions, if you will. And it's just, it depends on who you talk to. Different sources say John L. Sullivan was the first heavyweight champion of America. Other ones say he was the last heavyweight champion of the bare-knuckle area and the last heavyweight champ of America. But yeah, a lot of records, and I tend to go along with this, and you folks may disagree, and that's fine. But I think John L. Sullivan fought Dominic McCarthy in 1885 to win the heavyweight championship of America, and that is where the world heavyweight champions took place. Other people will say that no, the fight between James J. Corbett and John L. Sullivan ruled, and James J. Corbett's the first heavyweight champ of the world. And you know, it's a mix-up there. You know, it's a toss-up. You know, whatever way you want to look at it, I guess is right. I guess there's no right or wrong in this. But I tend to think that the Dominic McCarthy fight of 1885 was the beginning of the heavyweight championship of the world. And it went pretty smooth from 1885 until Jack Johnson won the title, and there was a big hoopla about him being the heavyweight champion, and so we started into the White Hope era. We had to stop that. They wanted, you know, that back in the day, and I don't know how to be politically correct in this, but back in the day, you know, a black man was not looked at favorably, and they did not want a black man as the heavyweight champion of the world. So when Jack Johnson
even
beat
though
Tommy
some
Burns,
of them fought for the title, right, over
yes.
in England.
Yes,
plays.
Yes,
the,
absolutely.
The black plays that fought for the title, and one fought for the title, the heavyweight championship, and one is freedom.
Yeah, that's Tom Molineaux.
Yeah, that's right.
The first heavyweight champ of America was Tom Molineaux, and he was known as the Virginia Slave, and he won his freedom by winning the championship.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Molineaux.
Then the confusion come when John L. Sullivan won. There was a heavyweight, and he fought for the title named Yankee Sullivan, who was a heavyweight. He was a brawler, but Yankee Sullivan went by a lot of different names and things around in New York in the Philadelphia era. So a lot of people, because of this Yankee Sullivan in New York and Philadelphia, to my understanding, got the confusion went with John L. Sullivan because of this Yankee Sullivan.
Correct.
Of that era.
Correct.
Yeah.
The last name was confused. Yes, that's correct, Aaron. Absolutely right. But Johnson,
isn't it right then when the London rules came about, you had Brockton, who had the Queen rules that turned into the Brockton rules, right? And then it
I mentioned that the Broughton Rules took place August 16th, 1743.
Okay.
Yes.
And
they stayed
and
in effect. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole basically that bare knuckle. I mean, that's when these guys were fighting in barns and stuff like that. Is that right? They used to fight in barns and they used to just tie a stake around in the ground and they just brawl in a field somewhere.
Yes, they would build. Well, it was illegal. So, you know, there would be a lot of police intervention back in the day, back then, Aaron. And so when they would when they'd hold these fights, you know, a lot of times the prize fighters would be arrested and they'd be incarcerated, you know, for the spectacle out in the public. It was illegal. So they had to hide a lot. And it was called, you know, toe the scratch back then. And back in the day of the English bare-knuckle fighting and the American bare-knuckle fighting, when you'd go to the fight, a round consisted of a knockdown. That ended a round.
Right.
So if you were, and then you'd have a minute to toe the scratch, and there would be a line in the center of the square circle, as they call it. And if you could not do that in a given time, well, then the fight was awarded to the man that could. But so many times there was not even. Say that again.
Yeah, you had to make the line.
You had to toe the scratch, is what it was called.
Yeah, toe the scratch. That's what it was called.
You had to toe the scratch. That's what it was called. And if you couldn't do that, of course, then you wasn't allowed, you know, the fight was over. But a fight, a round ended when a man was knocked to the ground. You know, it wasn't a timed round like we have today. You know, like we have a three-minute round and a minute rest.
It was really fight to the finish. Is that what you're saying, Tony? Fight to the real finish.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was a fight to the finish. Absolutely. That's how it went.
You know, some of these guys fought 100 rounds, 50 rounds, 60 rounds. Could you imagine? Guys can't even go 12 rounds this year.
The longest fight on record, I'm trying to think of who, and I used to, don't ever get old, Aaron, how I miss my mind. But the longest fight on record is 104 rounds, I believe. And some people say that again. I didn't hear you, sir.
What'd you say, Bob?
No, 104 rounds is a long time. How many hours?
Yeah, that's getting knocked down a lot. Because, you know, that constituted a round by the knockdown.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
So anyway, we go to... You know, go ahead.
Yeah, these guys can't fight. They can't fight that long.
Well, you know, it's my dream, and it will never happen. It will never, ever happen because the sanctioning bodies won't let it. And boxing, big business today, more so than a sport, in my opinion. But it's a sport I love, and it's part of my life, and I'll never, ever leave the sport of boxing, of course. But my dream is to go back to 15 rounds for a championship fight and to have 8 sanctioning bodies. Back in the day, when you were growing up and I was growing up and Bill and Linda, you know, in the sport of boxing, everybody in the world, whether you were a fight fan or not, knew who the heavyweight champion of the world was. That meant something. It didn't matter if you were a fan or not. You knew who the heavyweight champion was. And in some cases, the heavyweight champion was more popular than the president of the United States. That was something. And can you imagine back then there was over 130,000 fighters all after your title, and for you to be the heavyweight champion, the best man in the world, and you have all these people running after your title, and to be a top contender, be in the top 10 would be phenomenal, let alone be the champion.
Yeah. Well, Tony, we hate to cut you off. Time goes by so fast. And this is one thing, great thing about a series. The World Boxing Review radio show, you're going to be onward each week talking about this as we come up the line. The World Boxing Review, my name is Aaron Snowell. We have the radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and
our boxing historian, Tony Trim. Tune in every Saturday from 11 to 12. We'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show.
Okay.